Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of A Stab in the Dark, the Alibi podcast that investigates the worlds of crime fiction and TV crime drama, that is forced to work with a partner it didn't choose, then sits in a dirty Vauxhall Insignia and argues with them about whose turn it is to buy the coffee and donuts on a stakeout. In this episode, we'll be taking a closer look at Alibi's brand new series, We Hunt Together, a dark, surprising and sexy cat-and-mouse tale of manipulation and, yes, you've guessed it, murder. With us in our virtual interrogation room is none other than the star of Torchwood, Keeping Faith, and now We Hunt Together, the brilliant Eve Miles. My name's Mark Billingham, and welcome to A Stab in the Dark. Hello, Eve. Welcome to A Stab in the Dark.
Thank you very much.
How are you? Where are you, I should ask?
I'm in Cardiff.
Right.
Yes, locked. I'm in Cardiff. I'm at home in Cardiff. Locked down.
But soon to be on our screens in We Hunt Together. Now, this is your latest project after a long line of hits, and it's a really interesting one. How would you describe it to listeners?
I think it's been described, and quite rightfully so, actually, that it is a new take on a cat and mouse kind of scenario. But it's a series really about nature and nurture and what makes us do the things that we do, and what if something happens to us and traumatizes us, does that then define us? And that's the things that we kind of delve into the series. And of course, you've got your two detectives and then you've got your two killers. And it's strange how the two couples are very much alike, but just in very different kind of places and have had different paths in life that have all led to the same path. So it's a thriller. It's also quite a lot of dark comedy in there.
Mm.
And I think with such a dark story and a dark theme, there has to be, you know, light and shade in there. You know, you've got to have a bit of a smile through there, and you've got to like your characters, and hopefully people will.
Oh God, yeah. You're absolutely right about that light and shade. I mean, I think anytime you watch anything that's irredeemably bleak without a flash of humour, even if it's a very dark subject, you just know, you know.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've said it many times, I think I have the best laughs when I go to a funeral. I sound like an awful person, don't I, when I say that? But
no, I know exactly what you mean.
You're in a very dark place, you know, and people are in a very dark place, and yet you find that you have to find light in it to kind of survive it. And that's what these characters.
If you want to hear gags flying thick and fast, you go to a crime scene with coppers. I mean, you know, they have the most incredibly black senses of humour because they have to. I mean, it's a coping mechanism, isn't it? And we're talking about coppers. You play a copper. You play Lola Franks, who initially, it would be fair to say, comes across as very no-nonsense, a bit prickly to begin with. Is that fair?
Yes, I do think that's fair. Yes, she's unique, and she's tough. And how much of it is bravado, and how much of it's really her, is something that the viewers and or your listeners will find out when you watch it. But she's certainly kind of old school policing. You know, white is white, black is black, kind of by the rules. And certainly doesn't have any time for the sort of policing that the new partner, Jackson Mendy, comes in with. She's got no time for that. So, yeah, she's prickly. she's quite cold, I'd say, and a little bit frightening, I think. I thought she was quite frightening when I was playing her. I kept getting the notes, you know, you need to be tougher. So I went for it. And, she's what you see is very much what you get with her.
Yeah, and you mentioned that she gets this new partner, Jackson, who is incredibly open. He's incredibly open about everything, his life outside the job and all this kind of stuff. And Lola is anything but. Now, I've seen the first two episodes of the show, and it becomes apparent, as you say, that Lola's kind of guardedness stems from her own troubles in her personal life. What can you tell us about how that character develops over the series? I mean, obviously, without spoilers, I guess.
Yeah, well, you're introduced to Lola at a crime scene. And that's the crime that we follow all the way through the six episodes. So we find her in a place, actually, where she's at her best, because she is brilliant at her job. And you also find her in a place where she's brought straight into a crime scene with a new partner who's come from anti-corruption, who is very kind of wet behind the collar with anything that's with a homicide. He knows nothing about it. So she has to teach her boss what to do, and she can't stand doing that. There's not enough hours in the day to that. So she's obviously somebody who's quick, no-nonsense, very lacks empathy, and shuts everything out. She doesn't want to be noticed. The way she dresses, the way she speaks to people, the way she conducts herself in as a police officer and as a human being is very much, stay the hell away from me. I don't want anybody to look at me. I don't want anybody to notice me. In fact, I'd like to be a ghost. I want to be invisible. Now, there's a reason for people behaving like that. And we find out pretty soon, actually, what is going on with her. And then when you realise what is going on with her, dare I say, you start to empathise with her or have more patience with her.
Yeah, well, there was that there's that moment about 40 minutes into episode two where you go, what? And that's when you do start to find out what's going on.
And I think it's episode four that there's a discussion about what's gone on in the past and what's made Lola Franks Lola Franks today. And it's hard stuff.
Well, you've played a lot of complicated characters. Faith Howells in Keeping Faith, Gwen Cooper in Torchwood, Claire Ripley in Broadchurch are all characters that have kind of grey areas, flaws, plenty of hidden depths in their personalities. You obviously enjoy getting your teeth into characters like that. I'm guessing, as an actor, those are the characters that will appeal to you straight away.
Yeah, I think anything that challenges you as an actor, anything that you get and you go, I'm not sure whether I can do that, or I'm not sure whether I can find that, or I'm not sure I can understand that, those are the parts I always try to take because it makes me work. And it gives me the intention to find out why they're the way they are.
Now, at the heart of the show, you've already talked about the relationship with Jackson, played by Babu Cisse. And it's, you know, in many ways, to start with, they're the classic kind of mismatched investigating couple.
Yeah.
They're complete opposites, as we've said, in terms of personality. They have completely opposite views about criminality, where it comes from. They bicker, they make up, and you imagine they're starting to foster, as I say, only two episodes in, a close bond, you know, as the investigation unfolds. Obviously, there's a murder, there's several murders to solve, but that relationship is right at the heart of the show, and it's there in the title, even if that title does have a double meaning. And you've already talked about the two couples. There's a real symmetry to it, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad that you think that. You know, the story, Gabby Hell is such a brilliant writer, and the story, the narrative through it is very, very clear. But actually, like all kind of great dramas, whether they're thrillers, whatever genre they are, I feel anyway, as a massive film buff and a massive television buff, that what I love is telly and film, is that I tend to watch things that have really strong character connection in. I follow the character. I write. I tend to write character. And the kind of story follows that.
Oh, plot comes from character. Of course it does. Of course it does.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's really important, especially in a show like this, where you know, we're dealing with, you know, killers and death and kind of horrific, gory kind of death, that we have characters that we can identify with, connect with, and like. And I think, to have that, I think the characters within it, especially when they're working so close together, like Lola and Jackson do, they've got to be able to connect, they've got to be able to like each other, and they've got to also have disputes. And that makes it real. It makes it real, and it makes it kind of fun.
Yeah. Oh, there's got to be fun. I mean, I grew up watching, you know, Cagney and Lacey and Starsky and Hutch and the Sweeney and all these fantastic.
Totally. Exactly what I was just going to say. You know, Cagney and Lacey is like, you follow it every week because, you know, you want to talk. You want to see what's happening to Harv.
Yeah, of course. Well, blah, 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 murder investigation. But, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's great character stuff in there, brilliant stuff.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned it, you've already mentioned the nature v nurture thing, and that really is at the heart of it. And they discuss this frequently, the whole debate surrounding nature and nurture when it comes to violence, psychopathy. So, very hard question to throw at you, Eve. Where do you stand? Where do you stand on this debate?
I think there's a case for both. I'd like to think that... I think it's impossible to not be affected by your surroundings. But then I also believe and have hope and I have faith in people can change for the better. So I think that's where I stand. I think that, you know, the better start you have in life whenever you decide to start your life can help, can define who you are. But I also think that we are also in charge of our own destiny.
Well, Freddie, one of the people that Lola is after, says quite tellingly early on, I start my life every day.
Yes.
You know, that's the only way to do it. Whereas the other half of this kind of folie à deux, Baba, it comes from a very incredibly traumatic background. So you kind of believe that a character like that is able to potentially rediscover their own humanity down the line?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, I think that there's good in everybody.
Well, I've always had my pet hate is, and I get asked this at events sometimes because of what I write about, is do you believe in evil and monsters and that? And it's a real pet hate of mine, the whole thing about, I don't believe there's such a thing as a monster. We call them a monster because we can put them in a box then and go, that's what a monster is.
But actually, it's easy
for us, and it gets us off the hook because those monsters are actually our mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and the friendly doctor and the local builder. And we need if you call them a monster, you're never going to understand how these things happened and therefore stop them happening again.
No, absolutely. Have you seen the series called Mindhunters?
Oh yes.
Mindhunter.
Yes.
Well, that deals with that so fantastically. That kind of somebody who's done something so horrific. And again, we deal with that in We Hunt Together. Somebody has done something so kind of appalling and evil.
Yeah, evil inverted commas, right?
Inverted commas, you know, that we don't understand. And then when you research back into where they're from, what's happened to them and how they've processed themselves and then the knock-on effect of what they've done, how they psychologically deal with things like that, whether they feel like that's normal, whether that's something that they've seen every day of their life, whether that's something they've run away from all their lives, but something that has certainly been in their lives to be able to do that is fascinating, I think.
I mean, people always make the assumption that it's somehow namby-pamby and you're making excuses for people. And it's not an excuse, it's an explanation, and I think they're two very different things. And it's especially true, I think, when you look at something like a folie à deux that you're doing in the show, where you have this couple from very different backgrounds doing things for very different reasons. It's something that's always completely fascinated me. I did a TV documentary about Myra Hindley and Ian Brady, and it struck me that Brady did what he did because he was insane, clinically insane. It's not an excuse, it's an explanation, whereas she was doing something for an entirely different reason. There are always explanations, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's it is a minefield. And you know, with this kind of drama, with Mindhunter and all those kind of really cool, kind of thriller dramas that really get into the psychology of the thriller, the psychology of the killer. That's where, you know, the kind of, not the fun is to try and find, to try and understand, to be a part of it, but to actually give it weight, you know, real weight, and to try to really, really understand it. And that's where the great drama comes from. And we touch upon that in this, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I think the hook is always why rather than who, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
A why done it is so much more interesting than a who done it.
And especially with this, with We Hunt Together, it's, you know, from the word go, we understand who Freddie and Baba are, and they come together so quickly. And it's always fascinated me. It's something that I've always, you know, I've said, and I said actually in the audition of this, it's what's fascinating is when somebody does something as heinous and as bad and as horrific as that, as to take somebody's life, but you do it as a partnership. At what point does one person say to the other person, this is what I'm going to do, and are you joining me on that? That fusion, how does that fusion happen? And of course you see that, Gabby's written that so beautifully, how that fusion happens in this drama. It's really interesting, it's thoughtful, it's thought-provoking drama.
It is. We could certainly talk about that whole folie à deux thing for ages. It's a subject I'm fascinated with. But it's time to take a quick break to get out the Kia Ora and the Mivvies as we take that quick break, and we will be talking a lot more to the brilliant Eve Miles about her
TV. Did you say Mivvies?
I did say Mivvies.
I love a Mivvy.
Who doesn't love a Mivvy? This is the chance for anybody listening to get that Mivvy. And we'll be back shortly to talk about a lot more to Eve, notably about the rise of Welsh crime drama in just a few minutes. But first, it's time to see what our man with the spyglass, Paul Hirons, has been up to. Paul, what's occurring?
Yes, thank you, Mark. Now, you've been talking to one half of the detective pairing from We Hunt Together in your virtual incident room. And by the way, mine's a chuck ice if you're getting the ice creams in. And I'm very pleased to say that the other half, acclaimed actor Babu Cisse, is joining me now. Babu, welcome to A Stab in the Dark.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, we've been talking to Eve about We Hunt Together and asking her to kind of talk about Lola. It's your chance to talk about your character, Jackson Mendy. He seems so cheerful all the time, certainly in the first instances that we meet him. But there's a hint there that everything isn't quite so rosy at home.
Yes. I guess over the course of the series, it reveals that Jackson has a very unique way of dealing with situations, whereas some of the things that are happening to him in his personal life, and also the fact that this is the first time he's ever worked a murder investigation, you know, he's seeing blood and dead bodies and, you know, dealing with a lot more pressure in that respect, we see that he deals with things in a very different way. Hmm. Somewhere inside Jackson, he's made a deal with himself that he's not going to let the world get him down. Hmm. He trusts, I think the fundamental belief is that people will end up doing whatever it is that they do. That includes murderers, and that includes whatever personal issues he has in his private life. And even if it causes him a certain degree of pain or consternation, he has to accept that he can't control them.
And it's interesting because he, as you say, it's the first time that he's seen kind of murder scenes and forensics teams and, you know, thrust into this quite intense scenario. And of course, he's suddenly up against a pair of killers that are just seem kind of unlike anything he's kind of experienced before.
Yes, I mean, it's really triggering sort of that revulsion in him, but also he's intrigued.
Yeah.
Throughout the investigation, what I found was that Jackson is looking for even some of the most obscure details, you know, and asking many questions. But why would they do it this way? But why wouldn't they do it that way?
Yeah.
And trying to get into the psychology of these killers.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of, I'll talk to you a little bit about that later. But how would you describe his relationship with Lola? Because it starts off a little bit prickly.
Indeed.
It's the classic mismatched detective pairing. What can you say about those guys and how they operate together and how their kind of relationship develops over the series?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I think in our personal lives, we like to seek out people who are like-minded, because that way we won't have anybody challenge our peace of mind.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, however, in a work scenario, you might get put in with someone who you have absolutely nothing in common with. Mm. And I think that's because of Jackson's personality. He's willing to be very open to Eve's character, Lola.
Mm-hmm.
But her character has a serious problem with this cheerful human being in the midst of, you know, what is a murder investigation, understanding why he's reacting the way he is. This is horrible. And, you know, we need to take it extremely seriously, and we need to be down about it and serious about it all at the same time. So it creates a lot of friction between the two of them, which I think is interesting. I mean, you know, what makes good drama is relationships with people who are opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're forced to really evaluate over the course of the series who they are opposite this person, because they have to work so closely together. And there's times when they work absolutely smoothly, and then there's moments where they discover that fundamentally they are very different people.
Mm.
I think that challenge is what makes actually a lot of We Hunt Together very interesting.
And they really are a classic mismatched detective investigative team.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, who are your favourite TV detective pairings over the years? Did you kind of reference anyone in this project at all?
I'm going to be cheeky and D.S. Gale and Lewis from Lewis. But the reason I'm saying that is because I played D.S. Gale.
I was going to say, you were D.S. Gale. Yes. That's not fair, Babu.
When I replaced Lawrence Fox for a couple of episodes. No, that is unfair. The reason I'm just dodging the question, to be honest, there's no real pairings.
Right.
I'm a massive fan of Columbo.
Ah.
And actually, for me, Columbo seems like a mixture between Lola's very messy exterior and the fact that she sort of, you know, has a complicated life, doesn't look after her very well. Her life's basically falling apart like Columbo's car.
Yeah.
And my character's kind of inquisitiveness, openness, annoyingness, constantly turning up where he isn't wanted and, you know, poking his nose and wanting to know things. So, yeah. Columbo is like my all-time favorite. I think I've watched every episode twice or three times at the moment.
Do you know, I can see Columbo in Jackson now you mentioned it. I really can. And really, don't talk to our host, Mark Billingham, about Columbo. You'll be here for hours and hours.
Oh, that's
his favorite show. Okay, just finally, Babu, you mentioned the psychology of this, and Jackson has some very interesting views about the whole nature versus nurture debate. What are your own views? I mean, it's a fascinating debate, isn't it, about where does criminality and psychopathy come from? What are your views on that debate?
I watched once an interesting documentary. Unhelpfully, I can't remember the name, but in it, the person sort of conducting the study had been looking at scans of brains, you know, to talk about the nature argument of psychopaths.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd been looking on death row. Then he did a scan of his own brain, and he found that he had exactly the same shape of brain as all the other people in his study, that he had all the traits of a psychopath. And in fact, his family, his children and his wife and siblings say, yes, we've always known there's something up with him, but he's never killed anybody. He's never done any of those things that we consider psychopaths do.
Mm.
And in the end, there's a clip about his parents who say, you know, he had an extremely happy childhood.
Mm.
He was spoiled. He managed to run around and have a very good time. So there's the nurture element.
Mm.
You know, as a scientist, I'd studied microbiology many, many years ago. I really understood and respected nature for how it expresses. But the environment can be everything. I mean, you know, an elephant in captivity dies in 17 years, and they can live in 100 years in the wild. That's just one element of the environment, nutrition. So imagine all the other things, you know, that can impact. I think I respect nature, and I know that nature can play a big part, but ultimately you know, the environment will have a say. It's the environment that's the conductor of the orchestra. You see what I mean? And it's the environment that decides will this level. It's not like set dials. It's the environment that's going to turn up one dial, pull another down. You know, we are cause and effect creatures.
Well, it's a fascinating debate, Babu, and I think it'll rage on throughout the years and in the future. Thank you for joining us, Babu. And
thank you.
If we ever meet, I'll buy you for your birthday a nice long trench coat like Columba. How about that?
That would be amazing. I'd love that.
All right. And with that, it's back to you and Eve in the studio, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. And we are back with the fabulous Eve Miles, star of the new Alibi crime series, We Hunt Together. One of the other things that struck me when I was watching the two episodes I've been able to see so far is that Freddy, who's one of the mice at the other end of this cat and mouse chase, he's very much, in a way, a kind of a modern take on the old-fashioned idea of the femme fatales. He's very, very skilled at manipulating the men around her. Is that because it's something she's had to learn to do to survive?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that she's somebody who's never been wanted. And I think what you see with that character all the way through is that she's screaming to be wanted. Again, nature and nurture. And she does have those classic qualities of, you know, you play the cards that you've been dealt. You know, she plays her beauty, she plays her wit. She plays her intelligence really, really well. And she almost kind of becomes a chameleon in every scene. She adapts to every person around her, to every situation. I mean, she is sharp, razor sharp. And yeah, she's very, very manipulative.
Yeah. You start to get hints that maybe she's overplayed her intelligence. There's that wonderful moment, you know, after they first interview her, and it's like, God, she's so, you know, Jackson says, why is she so obsessed with how smart she is?
There's a, I think in particular with that character, there is a certain strong element of an extrovert. And, you know, sometimes when somebody, I think, in particularly with Freddie, she does start to enjoy herself too much, and that's when things will unravel for her, and that's when things get better for us.
And as you say, she's a product of her environment every bit as much as Babar is. And we get little hints of that, only small hints so far when you see her being dropped off at school.
That's right.
And you know, you wonder where the hell that's going.
Well, yes, and you know, and the father says to her, just don't be you.
Yeah, don't be you.
Just don't be you. And for a young girl being told that, well, then who am I meant to be? I'll be anyone you want me to be for you to like. And then that she's carried that through.
Yeah. Well, you can watch We Hunt Together on Alibi every Wednesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. from this week, which is Wednesday, May the 27th and Thursday, May the 28th. Eve, I want to talk to you a bit more about Welsh crime drama generally, because it's become such a major force over the past, I don't know, 5 years or so, thanks to the likes of Hinterland and your own show, Keeping Faith. I'm currently loving 35 Days. I won't even try and pronounce it in Welsh. I have enough problems. I'm married to a Welsh speaker, so I'm constantly being given lessons and failing them dismally. So I'll call it 35 Days.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, I was going to... I'll talk to you about it now. So I know that you learnt Welsh. You learnt Welsh for Keeping Faith, right? How was that?
Yeah, horrendous.
easier for you being Welsh, I would imagine.
Well, you it is such a difficult language. It's such a beautiful language. And my father's Scottish, my mum's Welsh, but she never spoke Welsh. There was never any Welsh in the house. I never had a group of friends that were Welsh speakers. So no, and I'm married, obviously, a Welsh speaker. And it was something that I would have loved to have done, but you know, there's all sorts of excuses, isn't there? I just didn't have the opportunity at the time. And when Keeping Faith came along, as I was saying earlier on, I like a challenge and I like to kind of think I can't do this. That's what turns me on in a job, when you conquer it and you do it. And it certainly was a challenge, and it remains to this day a huge, huge challenge. You know, going back to the third series and going back into the Welsh again was just unbelievably difficult, but unbelievably rewarding, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
But how long did it take you from, like, day one to the point where you're standing in front of a camera talking Welsh?
Well, I turned it down three times because they wouldn't believe that I couldn't speak Welsh. So then the producer came and sat at my table and I sat with it. And I'm not saying this to tell a funny joke or a funny story. I was having hives coming up on my neck that literally you would have to get, I don't know, pickaxes to try and climb, right? I was really a nervous wreck. And the producer sat opposite me and I took the script like this, and she took the script from me and she turned it around the right way. I could see the colour draining from her like this. I could see her mentally making a phone call to her husband going, put the conservatory on hold. This isn't going to happen. So she said, right, read, you know, the lines. And I said, I think you don't understand. I'm trying my hardest not to be rude, but I cannot read this. Never mind learning. I'm not the right person for this. So she said, we'll start with the alphabet. And I went, oh my shit, the bed, there's an alphabet. So so I started with Arbeca, and that was, I think it was 3 months before we were on set. It was intense. It was really, really intense. The entire process has been intense. You know, the 3 years, going on 4 years, has been really, really tough. But I'm pleased with it.
The thing that always struck me about it, a conversation we have quite a lot in our house, because I say my wife's a Welsh speaker, is because Welsh is an ancient language. There aren't really accepted Welsh words for a lot of very modern things. So how does Welsh cope with modern police procedure and legalese and all that kind of stuff? It's weird, isn't it?
It is weird. It is weird. But the language is huge. And I mean, there's several ways of saying no. There's several ways of saying yes. It depends on who you're speaking to, what their status is, if they're older than you, if they're younger than you. It's a minefield, but I'm glad I stepped in there and I won't step back out.
So what are the logistics of actually filming that? Do you just literally film like a whole series in Welsh and then the whole... Obviously not. You shoot a scene in English and then a scene in Welsh, or the other way around?
Yeah. I mean, when I'm asked this, this kind of nervous laugh always comes out. It's a nervous laugh. Because when we do it, it's just... It's like sieving languages through your brain, and you've got to do it super quick. There's no time. We've barely got time to do it in one language.
Right.
So to do it in two is nigh on impossible, and yet we're doing it. We'll shoot it. So we'll shoot the wide, and we'll shoot it, right, go first in English, then go in Welsh, vice versa, depends on how the director's feeling at the time. And so you do everything twice, basically. Every shot is done twice. And of course, you know, with the Welsh version, you have adverts, and in the English version, you don't. So you get a tremendous amount missing in the Welsh version. And you get a full version with the English. So it's an editor's nightmare. There's two different editors, there's two different execs. A knackered crew and cast.
So keeping faith right there at the forefront of this sort of flowering of Welsh crime drama set in Wales, where has it come from? I mean, has it always been there and just people haven't noticed, or is it just, because it really does seem to me to have completely replaced Scandi Noir and all that kind of stuff. Like, people woke up and went, well, hello, look at the Welsh landscape, look how fantastic, how atmospheric all this is, and look at the quality we've got in terms of, you know, writers and directors and actors. And is it as simple as that? One hit show like Hinterland, Keeping Faith, and then everybody goes, let's make lots more?
No, I think that we've always had a history of fantastic, in particular, thrillers down here. It's just that the light hasn't been shining on us. I think that the last 6-7 years, the kind of that limelight, that spotlight, kind of, it moves, doesn't it? It moves from kind of continent to continent, country to country, and then it just kind of, it found Hinterland, or Hinterland, you know, cast out a net, grabbed it, pulled it to the country, and the light has remained here because we keep doing what we're doing, which is, you know, producing some really, really authentic, original crime drama. We've got the landscapes, as you've said, we've certainly got the talent, but it's kind of, you know, Wales is a kind of a mystical, wonderful, magical place that's very undiscovered. And we seem to be discovering a lot of it through these thrillers, and people are getting addicted to it. And so they should, you know, we're proud of the stuff that we're doing, and long may it continue.
Well, Keeping Faith especially really, I mean, broke all sorts of records on BBC yeah. iPlayer, whatever. What do you think was about that show in particular that people just went crazy about?
I think it was, I think a big part of it, apart from the obvious, you know, we've got a phenomenal script. We've got, you know, Matthew Hall with a phenomenal script. You've got a good, you know, a superb cast. You've got an amazing producer and now writer and director named Pip Broughton. So there was all the kind of, the chemical set was there. And sometimes the chemicals kind of pop and kind of move away. And sometimes the chemicals come together and stick together and cause an explosion. And I think that's what's happened with Keeping Faith. The location was right. Nobody's ever filmed in Larne or done a thriller in Larne before in that part of Wales. When you think of it, it's quite extraordinary, actually. You know, it's such a unique place. You know, it looks CGI'd. Well, you know, Jesus, we got no money on this show. You know, the car I drive is my director's car because we had no more money in the pot. So, you know, when you see Larne, that's Larne. That's how it looks. So to put this genre and this story and this kind of family and this situation in those circumstances, in that situation and in that location, is a touch of genius, I think. It's a pocket in the world that nobody knew anything about, and yet something extraordinary happened in it. And it was addictive. And we wanted to know where that man had gone and if that family was going to be okay. It's a very human, intimate story.
And another character that resonated with you straight away, or that you thought, I can't do this. You know, that's something that challenged you.
Every single day, even to until we finished this, we haven't finished series three yet because obviously we had to stop because of lockdown. Even until that day where we were told that, you know, we're going to have to stop and we don't know when we're starting back up. Even on that day, I was getting ready to go on to set going, I don't know if I'm doing this right. I don't know if I am Faith Howells. I don't know if I'm good enough to do this. The challenge was there every day, buckets of it, buckets and buckets and buckets. I'd always say to the director, Pip Broughton, I thought this scene was an omelette, easy. Two eggs, whisk up, put in a pan, take it out and eat it. But you come out with a frittata, you know.
Tell me you stayed in Brown's Hotel, Eve, while you were filming it.
Yeah, I did, actually. I stayed in Brown's and I also stayed in the Corran. I stayed in a few places. I love it down there very, very much. Very, very much. Yeah, it's
and
in my
soul. And you've answered one other question, which is when that Yellow Mac is coming out again. Obviously, it's coming out again when the lockdown finishes.
Yeah.
And what about the future of We Hunt Together? I mean, it's set up as a, now that partnership is established, you're going to carry on hunting together?
Do you know, it's one of the most enjoyable, satisfying jobs I've done for a very long time. Apart from myself and Babu becoming great friends, we clicked instantly and we have a lot of fun together. But I'd love to carry on with Lola Frank because I think there's so much more to find out about those two.
Oh, well, that's great news. Listen, just before we let you go, Eve, we always ask our guests, just throw this at them right at the end, for a recommendation, just a recommendation for something to read and something to watch. Never been a better time to be reading and watching than there is right now. So what have you read recently that you'd recommend? Doesn't have to be crime, could be anything you like.
Mm-hmm. What have I read recently that's really good? I'm actually into my photography books at the moment. And I would suggest, there's a brilliant book that I'm reading. It's John York, Into the Woods.
Okay. And what about something that our listeners can watch on TV?
Oh, I'm late to it. I'm embarrassed to say so, but I'm enthralled with it. And that's The Ozark.
Ah, okay. What is it? Two seasons of that? Three seasons of Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman is just genius.
Genius. Well, there you go. Two fine recommendations there. That is about it. A huge thanks to Eve Miles for joining us on the latest episode of A Stab in the Dark. Just a reminder that you can watch We Hunt Together every Wednesday and Thursday on Alibi at 10 p.m. from Wednesday the 27th of May. And you can watch Alibi on Sky, Virgin Media, BT and TalkTalk. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please remember to review, rate and subscribe. It makes a huge difference to the future of the podcast and makes those of us involved do a small dance of joy. If you don't, once the lockdown is over, we will hunt you together. Gather outside your house and read 50 Shades of Grey through a loudspeaker until you beg for our forgiveness. So with that, it's special thanks to our producers, Paul Hirons and Joel Porter. That is about your lot. My name's Mark Billingham and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.